Poya.
This is Robbie.
Welcome to Uncharted and Eclectic.
And thanks for joining us again.
Today's episode is brought to you by Oracle NetSuite. One of the most time-consuming and stressful activities at my last startup was pulling the monthly reports we needed to prepare for our board meeting. You see, we were using a combination of homegrown solutions, spreadsheets, and QuickBooks, and made the mistake of allowing our technology and tech stack to slow us down. Don't make the same mistake we did. Upgrade today with Oracle NetSuite. The beauty of Oracle NetSuite is that it gives you the visibility and control you need over your financials, HR, inventory, sales, and much more. Everything you need, all in one place, instantly. Join over 21,000 companies using NetSuite right now. Let their team at NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/scale. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/scale.
Back, everybody. This is Poya, your host of Uncharted and Eclectic. I have a great friend with me today. His name is Sid. Sid and I actually met about two, three years ago at a company called Plato, where I was the interim head of sales, and we needed some growth marketing help, getting leads and whatnot. And out of, I want to say, 10 plus candidates that we interviewed, Sid definitely stood out. And Sid, I want to get into the story of why we picked you and everything in a second, but how you doing, man?
I'm good, Poya. Yeah, thanks for having me on the podcast.
Excited. Yeah, absolutely. I would say pre-COVID, I wouldn't guess where you're located, but now that we can't travel as much and you can't be a nomad, where are we these days?
I've been hunkering down in Vancouver in Canada for this whole COVID period, but usually I'd be maybe in SF, maybe somewhere else.
Okay, well, nice to have you. So look, usually we actually like to kick it off with your personal bio, and then we can kind of get to the rest of like your history, what tips you have when it comes to growth marketing for early stage startups. But give us a little bit of a context on who you are as a person.
Yeah, sure. So, currently I'm a founder of an AI startup that basically uses AI to generate content for marketing purposes. Before I started this company, I was doing consulting for various other startups, and it was marketing consulting, growth consulting, helping companies like Plato and others in SF and in Canada grow faster, especially in the early stages. I got into consulting because of a couple of big wins that I had early on when I was working in-house at a couple of startups. One startup was, I was doing marketing there. They got acquired by MailChimp. The second startup recently raised $22 million. I was the head of VP of growth over there.
Have we made any money? Has that money come liquid yet? Now that they've raised money, are we there yet, Sid?
Well, we'll be there soon, hopefully. I still have my stock options and shares in the company, and they're very, very valuable right now. So
okay,
nothing goes wrong.
Hashtag vested for you, my friend. So yeah. Look, this might sound like a crazy question, but what the heck is growth marketing? Like, define to us what growth marketing is, and how is it different, frankly? Like 99% of growth marketers I meet, I feel like they do what an SDR does. So like, how is it different? Like, what the heck is it that you guys do, and how is it different than what, I guess, like an entry level sales development rep does?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think everyone has a very different definition, so that's why it seems confusing. And everyone who calls themselves a growth marketer has very different things as well. The way I see it is, like, if you compare it to what is regular marketing, typically regular marketing, when you talk to the layperson, is, you know, your billboard advertisements and a lot of the top of funnel stuff is just like getting more traffic to your site, right? Growth marketing, I think, is the full funnel. So it's not just getting traffic to the site, it's getting them to convert into, you know, if you're selling a software product, getting them to convert into free trial, then getting those free trial users to convert into a paying customer, and then making sure those paying customers stay on the platform and are retained and so on. So it's kind of like taking care of that whole life cycle and the whole funnel. And it involves a lot of being able to analyze data, looking at data, understanding what's happening, what's going wrong. Whereas traditionally, your traditional marketing was, there's not a lot of data involved. You know, you put a billboard out there, you don't really know exactly how it's performing, right? But you can tell maybe there's a correlation between sales, but that's about it. So I think growth marketing is just more of the, is like the full funnel and more data. And yes, a lot of them do SDR kind of work, because if you think about what an SDR does as well, it's, they are sort of leading that person through the funnel, right? So like, you know, once it's kind of like the middle of the funnel stuff. So it's a combination of marketing, top of funnel marketing, and then SDR work to lead them through the funnel to sales.
Makes perfect sense. And when do you think it makes sense? Like talk to me a little bit about like, where do you think it makes the most sense to start looking at a growth marketer in general? Like when does it make sense for someone to reach out to Sid and ask for your help?
Yeah, I think it's as soon as you reach product market fit, because then you know that, you know, you have like a product that people want to use and will continue using. Because if you don't, and you start to pour money into marketing, then you're just going to get a lot of people come try the product and then leave, right? Because there's no product market fit.
And by your definition, how do you define product market fit? Because we've been part of organizations where they've had product market fit and you've been very beneficial, and in other cases you haven't. So now when you look at it, like the wiser Sid, right? How do you kind of look through, because your brand is associated with it, right? The more companies you work with that have product market fit that you can help versus not, like, it makes a difference. So what's your thoughts there?
Yeah, exactly. I think there's not an easy way to like objectively measure this, but like if you have companies or customers that are using your product, paying for it, and they are not churning, you know, or they don't drop off within like the first month, then I think you have product market fit, or you could like, there's some product market fit there, because you have customers who use your product, who like using it, and who are not churning, and they're happy to pay, continue paying for it. Yeah. So, I mean,
it makes sense. So like, let's take one example of a company you've consulted with, Gorgeous, right?
Yeah.
What made you realize, okay, this makes perfect sense for me to put fuel on this? Like, I'm confident if I go in there and like put my efforts in, this should grow, right?
That's a great question, because it made me think of another way to identify product market fit. Because the one thing that I noticed about Gorgeous was, I mean, when I first started talking to them, I didn't like know the numbers internally. So I could tell that they were growing and they're getting people interested. But what really got me interested in the company was they're a Shopify app, right? So the Shopify app store has a section for customer reviews of these apps. And I was looking at the customer reviews for Gorgeous, and it was all really great, 5 stars, in depth, like people were loving it. People were like, this is amazing. And that I think is like a really good indicator. So when you have companies who using it, happy to pay, and Gorgeous are not cheap, right? Happy to pay for it. And they're also just like really excited about talking about it, giving reviews, sharing it with other people. I think that's like a very good indicator.
So it's almost like, in other words, net promoter score, right? Are they willing to kind of share? And was this like reviews that Gorgeous was asking for, or was it just organically like they were doing it on their own?
They were just organically doing it.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. NPS score, I think that's a very good indicator for sure.
Okay. And for those, for whatever reason, are not familiar, NPS is net promoter score. Feel free to Google it, look it up, but just in case somebody doesn't know. So when you go into these companies, right, what would you say is the one pattern that keeps coming up, whether it's a mistake or a lesson or something that you really would love to kind of communicate to the average Joe, such as myself, that doesn't know enough about growth marketing? Like what is something that you keep continuously saying companies do right or do wrong that you're like, this is why I came in to help out, right?
You're like, you mean like within the context of marketing?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'll give you my example. One pattern I'm seeing, right? Like when I go into consulting, usually it's around product market fit. And yeah. What I've realized is companies try adding salespeople too early to the funnel. And what I mean by that, true hunter sales mentality people, they add it way too soon, right? Because typically, right, your salesperson, like, they do their job right, they're incentivized to keep growing, right, the company and, like, maximizing the revenue, whatever you want to call it, right? Whereas in the early days, if you really care about product market fit, right, getting the customer to use it and recommend people, you want to guide them through that process, right, and then find out what's working, what's not working. You almost want to kind of prioritize usage and health and all those things. So that's just one pattern I'm seeing, right? So I'd love to know, like, what that is for you from the lens of marketing.
Yeah, that's a good good point. I mean, I agree with that pattern that you see. I think for me, within marketing, it's a lot of companies are not, especially at the earlier stages, companies are just unsure of who they want to be marketing to, right? Like, who, what kind of customer persona do they really want to target? Which is interesting, right? Because it's also, like, slightly related to the product market fit. Like, if you don't really know who your market is, then how you're going to measure product market fit. So, kind of like, yeah, one of the biggest mistakes is just like, hey, we don't have a well-defined persona. It could be anybody. It could be, you know, any company. And so I'm always trying to get them to define that early on. But I also know that it's very hard for, say, founders who have that mentality of, let's just get a whole bunch of salespeople and sell, to take a step back and not sell and to, you know, do things like identify your customer persona. It sounds very rah-rah to them, you know?
No. It makes, so one of the things you like to do is, I call it alignment, right? We did this at Plato, right? Like, it took us, and I remember Eddie Nguyen, who, shout out to him, he was on one of the calls or episodes earlier on. He kind of made us go through that practice, right? But I guess what I'm having a hard time with, so, like, I get it, right? Like, aligning on ICP, aligning on those things make perfect sense. But where do we go from there, right? Like, how do we keep everybody accountable to know? Because the trade-off, right? The trade-off you're making sometimes, right, in the early days is, hey, let's just double down on these ICP, the people in, like, the people that ideally or realistically we can serve, I guess, right? Yeah. These are the customers. This is what's interesting about them. This is how we characterize them. Like, let's just double down on those. But at the same time, that forces you to kind of lose out on the other possibilities, right? And what if they come in, right? And, like, do you serve them? Do you not serve them? Like, how do you make sure you're on the right path is kind of what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah. So, like, you're basically saying is, like, for the company's customers, who are not in the ICP?
Yeah, this is almost right. It ties into, like, having some predictability and some scale, right? Yeah. When you look at the ICP, it allows you to characterize and start making things a little more repeatable, and you can find them a little sooner, and you can do outreach that's a little more scalable, right? It's easier to kind of keep going after it, right? Yeah. But what I'm trying to, like, understand is, like, how do you make sure if you do those things, you're on the right path? Right, you're not trading it off with other possibilities that you like are losing out on, essentially.
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think what you should do is, like, once you identify this ICP, you want to do a lot of experiments, like basically making bets, right? And you try a bunch of different things across different channels before you turn them into systems and processes like you described. And so when you do that initially with, like, the little experiments, you're testing it and you're tracking it. And then you basically look at what is performing the best, and then you decide to commit to that channel or that tactic. So it's kind of like you test out a bunch first, see what's working, and then commit to the ones that are working. So that way you know that you are on the right path and you're not, like, missing out on something that's more lucrative or better ROI.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks for sharing. So I wanted to actually kick off the call with this way, but we just didn't, and we kind of kicked it off. The back history with how Sid and I met was, he interviewed at Plato. We probably interviewed, I don't know, 10 plus candidates, right? This is the early days where we had, I don't know, maybe 6 employees, right? Yeah. And the thing that stood out, you were by far the least prepared candidate. And I mean that as quote-heartedly in that, like, you knew about our business and everything, but, like, you were the one candidate that didn't come into the meeting with like a presentation about what makes you great, why you can help, so on and so forth. And it also helped you. It was a double-edged sword in that, like, it was, I was kind of like taken back, but at the same time, you did something that nobody else did, which was, hey, let's collaborate. This is how we kind of move along. This is how I can help you, right? Mm-hmm. And like, you just got on the whiteboard and like, you got us engaged. It wasn't like a presentation. It was like, let's discuss this together, right? And this could be on us, right? Maybe back in the day, we didn't set up the candidate to succeed. So it could 100%, the ownership could be on the hiring manager or the interview team. But why I share this story is, I keep looking back, and I think one of the best characteristics of a, like a really good salesperson or a marketer or any person that's like customer facing is this over communication and collaboration. Like, it just keeps coming up. And I think you need to have a good balance, right? Like, you can't, you shouldn't overdo it, but you should do it enough, you know? Yeah. So what I'm trying to, I guess, ask is like, what makes a good growth marketer in your opinion? Now that you're a founder, right? And you don't probably have enough time to do those things yourself. Like, and if you're hiring someone, like, what are maybe like the top things you look for that you're like, these are non-deal breakers. Like, I want to bet on this candidate for X, Y, and Z reason. What are those reasons?
Yeah, I think the number one thing I'd look for is the ability to adapt and learn. So what I mean by that is, you know, I guess like your growth marketer is not going to be an expert in like everything or in every channel, right? So they need to be able to figure out what channels are the best and then become good at it or become good enough at it until such a point where they can hire like a specific channel expert or something. I think that's like kind of like just a good guideline for any marketer, especially early marketers. So being able to adapt and learn, you know, keep up to date with various marketing strategies and learn those. The second thing is, having a sort of strategic bent of mind. So being able to think in frameworks and processes and on a strategic level, right? Because at the end of the day, like, you know, growth marketing, growth hacking is made out to be, oh, just like do these hacks and you'll grow really quickly. But in reality, it's, you know, the real growth comes from just doing the boring things over and over and over again. And having those results compound over time. And so someone who can think about that in terms of a framework and be very systematic about it, I think that's a valuable skill. And the third one is having a good understanding of data. Doesn't necessarily have to be a very technical person or a data scientist or anything, but like being able to like look at data, understand what it means, interpret it, and use that data in some way, I think that's very valuable too.
I gotta tell you, as you're speaking, I'm like, how the heck is this different than what a really good sales leader does, right? I'm talking for like transactional deals, like Gorgeous. It's literally the same thing, right? Like, you want to be curious, you want to offset for things, weaknesses you're not good at. But in a nutshell, right, if you're really good at it, what you do is you build systems or processes that are repeatable and people keep. And what's tough about it, especially for someone with my personality that gets bored easily, you get bored easily, right? After it becomes a routine and you keep doing the same thing. I know like the hard part about doing it is just like keep following that checklist, that process almost after time. But like, am I thinking about it the right terms? Like it sounds to me like they're actually in some ways really aligned, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. And also like just, you know, that point about it gets boring, and that's absolutely true. But then that's part of like your life cycle or as a marketer, right? Like you do this thing and you like do the same stuff over and over again, and then slowly you increase in your experience, and then you get a point where you're a manager, and then you hire people who are going to do the things over and over again, and then you start to think a little more higher level and strategic, and that's kind of like that's part of the thing, you know.
So the $1 million question in this case is, why don't we see more growth marketers go into sales or vice versa? Actually, I see more salespeople go into, I think, marketing. Why don't we see the reverse, right?
That's a good question. And I don't know. I think maybe because there's this element of being very customer, like you have to get on the call with a customer as a salesperson, but not necessarily as a growth marketer. I mean, I do think that growth marketers, especially new marketers to companies, should be talking to customers. But the difference here is, like, you as a salesperson, you're getting on the phone with these people who are prospects, and your job is to close them. Whereas the growth marketer doesn't have to do that on a call. They do that in other ways, right? Like through content and through A/B testing and advertising and all of that kind of stuff. So I think that's, like, maybe the big difference there. And maybe some people are just like, yeah, you may be good at growth marketing, but they're not comfortable with, like, getting on a call and pitching and doing the hard sell to customers.
Fair enough. You guys want to be behind the scenes. Is that what you're saying, Sid? You don't want to ask for the sell. Is that what I'm hearing?
I'll be honest with you, though. I like doing sales. I do sales all the time too. I mean, like, the way I interviewed with Plato, and this is what I do with other companies, it's really just me is a sales pitch, right? So I enjoy doing it, and I've been doing it for my startup as well. But I guess, well, like, not many do.
Yeah. Now that you've been doing it, what surprised you? What did you think? Like, I'll give you the reverse, right? Okay. For the longest time, I was like, marketing this and that. And I started doing some of the things marketers do, like write an ebook or even a blog post, something as simple as that. And yeah. I was like, oh my God, this is significantly harder than I thought, you know? Yeah. And like, my respect for people, like, for my counterpart just went through the roof. Yeah. And I think the reverse in many times is also true. So what has, like, you're an entrepreneur, you're a founder, you got to go out and, like, kind of pitch yourself, pitch your company, get people to take a chance on you. Like, mm-hmm. What has been the most surprising? Like, how do you think that's made you be a little more empathetic for your counterparts in sales? You could also say, hey, I haven't really closed anything, and I just want to throw that out. Like, you can take it back if you need to.
No, man, I guess it's like, so here's the thing. What I'm doing right now is it's a private beta and it's free, right? So
sure,
it's not like, it doesn't take a lot of sales know-how to actually someone on free.
Sure. You know?
So I guess the real test will come when we do release a pricing plan and I have to, like, convince these people to start paying. Maybe that's when I'll have some new insights for you. But for now, yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's been, you know, these people are obviously attracted to the fact that we're giving away this product for free, and it's a brand new product and has very exciting uses and potential for them, because there's no products like that's doing what we're doing, right? We're generating content for ads from scratch. And there's, like, you know, there's no other product that's doing that out there. So it's just, like, very appealing to people, especially people who have to write that content and write ads all day long. If a software can do it for them, they're happy to get on a call with me, tell me all about all their problems and look and see my demo and sign up for free. So
you are the best salesperson I've ever met. Like, I ask you a question and you're just, like, throwing in your product placement. I love it. Like, we're trying to make this educational and you're like, nope, I got to throw it in. So, you're doing the right things and you're on the right path. So, respect for you. Well, Sid, this has been such a fun episode. I've actually learned a lot just from our collaboration today. Before we say our goodbyes, the one last question we love to ask everybody, if you were to look back, right, maybe this is before that first job that got acquired by MailChimp or the company that raised a lot of money that you were at, what do you think the wiser, older Sid would love to share with the younger Sid? Like, what is that one thing that you really wish you would tell your younger self?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I would tell my younger self to probably start something a lot sooner. I feel like maybe I've not to waste so much time, you know. I feel like I've wasted time and I've, like, dragged my heels on starting this company. And it's kind of just like, I guess maybe there was a part of me deep down inside that always felt that I was not ready. But I would like to tell that kid that, yeah, you're definitely ready. Like, I think maybe you put in your 3-4 years and then you're ready, but don't waste too much time off that.
You're talking about your own company specifically, right? Because yeah. I actually think you have this mentality of bias for action. and sometimes to the extreme, you like overdo it. So, but I think you're coming at it from an angle of like, I wish I told myself to take a chance on like running with my own idea and make it a enterprise thing. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like when I left the company that raised $22 million recently, right? Like I left them in 2017, I want to say, and it's 2020 now. It's been 3 years, or maybe I left them in 2017. So it's been 3 years, right? And it should have been 2 years.
Yeah.
And I left that company specifically because I wanted to start my own thing. I didn't have an idea back then, but you know, I thought it in a few months I'd have an idea that I could start working, and I just never did.
So what do you think result like? What I'm trying to find out is like, what made you finally freaking like take action? Like, what did you have an aha moment? Was there something?
It was forced on me by COVID. Like when COVID hit.
Okay.
My clients stopped working with me. Right, I had a few marketing clients. I was taking up most of my time before COVID, and they're like, "Oh, we're cutting down marketing budget." And then I was like, "Well, I have so much time on my hands now. What am I doing with my life?" Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like this whole existential kind of thing. And then I was like, "Well, I got to start something."
So as much as we hate a global pandemic happening, when your company gets big, we're going to look back and like, you know how a lot of companies, like I keep seeing, like when people talk about COVID, they're like, well, the worst companies were built during tough times. That's the story I want to tell about your company, Sid. So if people want to get in touch with you, my friend, what's the best way? Are you open to that? And what's the best way for people to connect with you?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, you can email me, sid@usebroca.com. You can find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Siddharth87, SIDDHARTH87. Those are probably the best way. Or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, Sid Bharat, Facebook, Instagram, whatever.
Yeah, we'll put it on we'll put it on the show notes, no problem. The real question is, do you finally have a TikTok yet, or are we not there yet?
No, I don't.
Sid, what kind of growth marketer are you, man?
I've been seeing Ashley talk to Ashley about it, and she keeps saying I should get on it, and she's been on it, but for those of you who don't know, Ashley's like a mutual friend of ours who worked at Flipper for a bit.
That's because Ashley's a good brand marketer. She's an early adopter on that. We got to have her on the show as well. But
yeah,
look, in all seriousness, Sid, this has been a great episode. I'm sure a lot of people will enjoy it. I can't thank you enough for your friendship. For the one thing I have always valued about you, Sid, is you take your work seriously, but you don't take yourself seriously. So I hope even as a founder, as an entrepreneur, even when the stress is hit, you don't forget that, because it's one of your best characteristics. And for everybody listening and tuning in, thanks for joining us. And if there's something we can leave you with, please take action, no matter how hard or how easy you have it. Like, just keep growing and going outside of your comfort zone, because that's the way we kind of keep getting better and better as a human. So thanks so much. And until next time.
Thank you.
Today's episode is brought to you by Oracle NetSuite. One of the most time-consuming and stressful activities at my last startup was pulling the monthly reports we needed to prepare for our board meeting. You see, we were using a combination of homegrown solutions, spreadsheets, and QuickBooks, and made the mistake of allowing our technology and tech stack to slow us down. Don't make the same mistake we did. Upgrade today with Oracle NetSuite. The beauty of Oracle NetSuite is that it gives you the visibility and control you need over your financials, HR, inventory, sales, and much more. Everything you need, all in one place, instantly. Join over 21,000 companies using NetSuite right now. Let their team at NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/scale. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/scale.